Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey there, Geekscapists. I hope you're well. I'm Jonathan Lundin, your host. And if this is your first Geekscape podcast, well, strap yourselves in. We're going to be talking some pop culture, especially this episode. Sometimes I have a guest on Geekscape. I love the interviews. We've had some awesome interviews in the past couple episodes. Those have been great. The numbers have been fantastic. So thank you to all of you for sharing the show, telling your friends about it, leaving reviews, subscribing, all of the things that you all are doing, because I'm really happy with the numbers. That being said, sometimes I like to talk a little bit of news and reviews, which is what this episode is going to be about. I have my good friend Garrett Briones, who's Geekscape's award. He is living, he doesn't live with me, but that'd be weird. He's quote unquote Geekscape's award, and like Bruce and Dick Grayson, Bruce Wayne and Dick Grayson, I've taken him under my wing here at Geekscape. And I've trained him. Actually, I think Matt Kelly is Dick Grayson. Matt Kelly is the first. All right. So Garrett sadly has the Joker and a crowbar coming his way. I guess that would make Garrett like Jason Todd. But Garrett Briones is on the show. My former film student. And he's going to be talking all sorts of stuff. Comics. We're going to be talking about Andor, if you're watching that new Disney Plus show, the Star Wars show. Video games. We're going to tackle everything here on this brand new Geekscape. Things are going to get a little crunchy here on Geekscape for the next couple of weeks. I get married in less than 3 weeks. Y'all probably still want your podcast. You're like, I don't care if you get married, Jonathan. I want to hear my nerd talk. Yes, I think that is. I'll tell you what. Let's make a deal. If you will hit that share button and send Geekscape to your friends right now and say, hey, you've got to subscribe to this podcast, I will continue to give you consistent podcasts through the wedding. Yeah, I know. Things are getting pretty hectic. I am pre-recording an episode coming up this week with an actor. I'm not going to tell you who it is, but if you're an MCU fan, you're going to be pretty happy and like shocked. You're going to be like, what? How did he get that guy on his show? What? So be watching for that one. I'm probably going to run it next week, pre-recording it this week. And then we'll see what happens between now and the wedding. I jet right after the wedding to Santa Fe to show El Rey again. We've had two El Rey screenings in the last 2-3 weeks, so things have been kind of hectic. What do you want from me? I want to make movies. I have a movie out right now. It's just a little short in festivals, but it's getting programmed, which is great. I don't think I've skipped a beat on the Geekscapes, though. So, you know, we're doing all right. Let's not skip a beat now. We can talk after the intro, so let's go ahead and run it. We'll be right back, and we'll be talking news, reviews, comics, video games, and more with Garrett, the Geekscape Award. All right. welcome back to Geekscape. Sorry if I'm a little bit distracted. A lot going on here. I just got back to Los Angeles. I had about 24-30 hour period with Heidi before she flew to the East Coast for a high school reunion. And of course, we get married in 3 weeks. That being said, she is in the comments while she sits at the Austin airport for her connection to Los Angeles. And she starts out sweet. Let's go ahead and run the comments here on this. She goes, "Hi, XO," on her Facebook. I guess she's watching on her phone there in the Austin airport. And then when I start talking about doing podcasts through the wedding, the comments quickly turn into, "Wait, What? Okay. Oh, wait, hold on there. Hold on. Here's the next comment. All caps. Through the wedding, how will you do that? No, I will not be I'm not podcasting our wedding, all right? It takes me an hour to record a Geekscape. It takes me another hour to kind of like skim it, look for edits, and upload it to you, the audio version. So I think I can do a Geekscape and have it out for y'all. I think Heidi should be a guest, actually. I think Heidi should be on Geekscape when we get married. That week or the week after, we should talk about, hey, you're married now, and how nerdy was our wedding? We have a pretty nerdy wedding planned for our guests. A lot of former Geekscape guests are going to be there. A lot of friends of Geekscape are going to be there. Some Geekscapes are going to be there. And as Heidi now says in the comments, that could be fun. You see how I play the game here? Happy wife, happy life. You know what, baby, will you let me podcast the week of our wedding if you're the guest? A little bit of, you know, just a little bribery. That is manipulation, Jonathan. Do not do that. Heidi, come on the show the week of our wedding and let's talk about it. Matt Kelly's in the comments. He says, you know, I was actually gonna do a red carpet live stream at your wedding. Yeah, go ahead, Matt. I mean, Matt is a groomsman. He is actually in the wedding, Matt Kelly, the first ward. So I'm excited about that. It's going to be a celebration. And then here's funny. My friend Nzinga Blake, who I met years ago at the beginning of Geekscape, she used to work for Current. She's a better host than me. She should be hosting this show. She says, hi, Jonathan. Hey, Nzinga, how are you? Now, there's a professional host right there. Speaking of wards, we got Matt Kelly, the first ward, in the comments. Let's go ahead and bring in the second ward. This would be the Jason Todd ward. That's Garrett.
See, I was hoping you would find someone to say was I wanted to be Tim Drake, but I mean, I guess if I got to get beaten to death with a crowbar, at least I get to be Red Hood and have thousands of fans.
So. You get to be Red Hood. Tim Drake is the next.
Yeah.
The next Robin. So no, Matt Kelly is Dick Grayson.
That makes sense.
You got a crowbar coming, but you know what? You bounce back.
Yeah, I mean, he's very popular. If you go on Twitter, he's a very popular character. Red Hood is, he's a very popular, very, very passionate fan base. Very passionate. I say that as someone who is a fan of Red Hood, but there are some people that are, they are very protective of Jason Todd. And if you, when he changed his outfit and he had like the red, like half mask, it was crazy in there.
We'll be talking comics here, Geekscapists. First, I just got to catch y'all up on what a crazy-ass time I've had since last we spoke. If you go back in the feed, we had an awesome roundtable. Garrett was a part of it, where we broke down D23 and all the Marvel announcements, the Disney announcements, the Pixar announcements, the Star Wars ones. those Robinson Inmans. So go back in the feed if you want to hear our opinions of everything that was announced at D23. We also, again, like I said, have some amazing interviews up on the feed. Again, thank you for the increased numbers. Things have been rough. I'm not going to lie. The Burbank Film Festival happened in the midst of this. We showed El Rey, and then I flew to Austin and showed the movie at the Lake Travis Film Festival, which you're like, hey, I never heard of the Lake Travis Film Festival. No, it's in its third year. It's a small boutique festival. And I'll tell you, it was an excuse for Jonathan to go home and visit his parents, a little bit of a relaxation, get to connect with my parents right before we turn around and get married. And I was like, hey, things are building up. I got a lot of stresses going on here. I need to just kick back, go to a festival, celebrate the movie. I got to see Geekscapist Ian Rainey in Austin. He came to the El Rey screening. I got to catch up with him for a day. We had a lot of fun. Saturday night, I'm home. And my parents are flying back from a trip. And they call me as I'm at the film festival and say, hey, so we landed in Austin. We have news. We think we have COVID. And I was like, oh, okay. Can y'all not speed back from the airport quite yet? Let me run home, grab all my stuff, and move my stuff out of the house where I was going to stay and see my parents and, you know, kick back a little bit before this bachelor becomes a married man. And that did not happen. I raced back to the house. I grabbed my luggage. I moved it. And I got to see my parents from 10 feet away.
Through the window.
Through the window.
Hand on either side.
Oh, my God. It was pretty depressing, man. I got to tell you the truth. Like, I needed a hug. I needed, like, a little bit of R&R with my parents and have one last little piece of peace and quiet before the wedding. And that did not happen. It was pretty depressing, I got to tell you. But I was going to fly back maybe early, and I thought, no. Jonathan, you're taking all the precautions. You're being safe. We're going to wear a mask. And your parents have been gone for like 2-3 weeks. They don't have any groceries in their house. Like, dude, take care of your parents. So I got to go grocery shopping. I got to go pick up my parents' mail. And I love them. There's not a lot of opportunities where you get to tell your parents how much they mean to you. And I took that opportunity. I'll tell you one instance, though, where Jonathan, the egg really started to crack with Jonathan. My father left his iPad on the plane. It happens. I left a freaking Game Boy Advance on the plane. I never got it back. And that was heartbreaking for me. I remember leaving my game. I was almost done with like so many games, and I left it on the freaking plane. So my dad leaves the iPad on the plane, but he can track his device, and it ended up in the Austin airport. All I had to do was convince Air Canada to give my dad give me the iPad. My dad couldn't go because he got freaking COVID, right? Which no fault of his. Like, we're going to catch it. Sooner or later, we're going to catch it. My parents made it a nice 2.5 years being responsible and vaccinated and all that. So I'm super proud of them, and I'm super happy that they're doing great. So I have to go to the Austin airport to get this iPad back for Air Canada. I was like, this is going to be simple. It'll take me 5 minutes. We already know where it is. They have already told Air Canada, I got to go get it. Here's the problem here, Garrett. Air Canada subcontracts to the Austin airport. It's not Air Canada. It's like some other company that is only at the airport for like 2 hours a day. And when they're not running the gate for Air Canada, they're running the ticket booth, and there's only like 3 employees. So they can't cover both at the same time.
Yeah,
so no. I go to the ticket booth, and I'm like, this will be easy. I'm going to go get that that iPad. And all I hear is like, okay, where are they? An hour goes past. They're not there. And I'm like, okay, let me go to the information desk. I don't know where they are. The information desk doesn't help. I go to the lost and found. We don't cover their lost and found. That's like if you leave something like on a bench in the airport. That's what the lost and found is for. So I'm like, all right, where the heck are these Air Canada people? So I go and I go to ask the dude with the walkie-talkie who's, you know, helping with the ticketing. And he says, oh, yeah, they're going to be back in like an hour probably. They're like taking care of deboarding the flights. And I was like, okay, well, if you can get anybody here faster than that, I'd really appreciate it. I'm like texting them, I'm tweeting angrily, I'm trying to keep it together. I've been there for 3 hours at this point, and it's getting a little stressful. Finally, my phone's about to die, and I see the Air Canada employees like finally come up. And there's a line of people who are about to miss their flights and need to check their bags. So I let them go first. I finally get up there and I say, hi, I'm asking about the iPad. And they're like, great. Are you Jack? I'm like, no, I'm his son. They're like, okay, we really need to talk to Jack. I'm like, hey, he's not going to make it. He's at home. He's sick. And they're like, why? I was like, because he got COVID on your flight. Like, I did a little knife twist on that one. I was like, you know what? He caught COVID on your flight. And, so you got me. I'm his son. And they're like, okay, well, I guess we can give it to you if you put his PIN number in. And I'm like, I don't know. I don't have my dad's PIN number.
Yeah,
I don't live with it because I don't use it. It's not my iPad. Yeah. So they're like, they present the iPad to me like, yeah, just put in his PIN number and you're good to go. And I'm like, I don't have this information. So I'm like, I know it's easy to solve, though. Technology. I'm going to text my father. I'm going to get the – I text my father. And I say, hey, Dad, what's your PIN number on the iPad? And then my phone dies. Of course it dies. Like 3 hours in, it dies. I was ready to blow up right there, Garrett. Could have used my
charger.
I could have used my ward. I mean, I was going back and forth to the car to charge it in the interim, and it just didn't charge enough. And I shouldn't have been angrily tweeting is the problem. I shouldn't have been
I saw the book.
My apologies. I deleted the tweets. They're still there somewhere. But please, I was stressed out. You know, my parents are sick at home. I'm trying to take care of them. Things aren't going the way I want. Mm-hmm. You know, we got the films and the Geekscapes and the wedding and all this pressures. You know, I started to feel like Peter Parker. He just has to make it back to Aunt May for dinner, and like the freaking vulture attacks him, and the Sandman pops, and suddenly like Hydro Man's running around, and you got to deal with Doc Ock. Like, I was like, can everybody just chill for 2 seconds so that Peter can make it back with Aunt May's medicine? Can we just chill? And so the phone, I'm able to resuscitate the phone just enough for for it to turn on. And my dad has sent me the PIN number. I put it in and they say, great, just sign this. No, thanks. And I grab the PIN. I just grab the iPad and I walk out of the airport. I had had it. I was done. I grab the iPad. I walk out of the airport. Man. I get in the car and I'm like, cracking. I'm like, that was too much. These people are yelling at me like, why would you have the iPad? Why would you have the PIN number? Because I don't live with him. It's not my iPad. Why don't you live with him? Because I'm 43 years old. I don't live with my freaking parents. Okay. Like, just leave me alone. Yeah. Everybody just leave me alone. I wanted to yell, everybody leave me alone at least 15 times this past week. And I get in the car. I turn on the phone as I charge it. And Heidi's like, everything okay? And I was like, I got the iPad. And then I got the hell out of the airport before I ended up on somebody's TikTok video. Like, it got close, man. I almost did a Karen.
You almost got famous. Garrett. What's a male Karen?
I don't know what it is.
A Brad or a Dan?
What is it?
I don't know. I'm just trying. I don't know.
I needed my ward there, man. I meant Matt Kelly.
Oh, okay. Yeah, Matt Kelly should have been there. That's his problem.
I needed Matt Kelly there, and things were getting, you know, I just too much. You know, I wrote about this on Twitter. It was really sad. No, it wasn't sad. I've been consolidating my bank accounts because Heidi and I are going to share our finance. You know, we're getting married. In case you didn't know that, we're getting married. And I was like, I don't need this bank account, Austin. Then I opened it for a health savings account. Like, this, we're going to get to the geek stuff. Just trust me, geek savings.
Money.
But space. This hit me pretty bad. You know, this one hit me. I go to this bank to close this account. I don't need the checking account anymore. And I'm trying to like streamline, consolidate finances. I walk in. It's the church that my brother's funeral was in back in '96. Ooh. Dude, I wasn't ready for that. I mean, as I'm driving to it, yeah. I was like, dude, I know where I'm going, but I don't know it as a bank. Yeah. It was a church. It was the church that my brother was funeral was in. And now it was a bank. Wow. So I went in there and the guy was like, hey, just a couple forms to fill out. I was like, I'll sign anything. Like, just, I'm totally wigged out right now. I'm totally like weirded out. And so the Austin trip was emotional. It was stressful. It was weird. I came back and I was like, I got to reconstitute myself, man.
That's a lot. I didn't know about that.
And so I scheduled a film shoot like 3 days before my wedding in San Francisco.
That's an
end, dude. And then we got married and then I go to Santa Fe to show the movie again. You know what? Heidi, I love you. You wanted the filmmaking life. This is the filmmaking life.
Yeah. A journeyman.
I'm literally filming like Tuesday and then coming back, rehearsal dinner Thursday, wedding Friday. And you know what? Before I go and film on Tuesday, Geekscape with Heidi Cox. So you know what? Pick it, Heidi. You want the Monday before our wedding? You want the Monday after our wedding?
Heck yeah.
What do you want? What do you want, Heidi? This is the filmmaking life, Heidi. You're going to make films. I'm going to make films. This is what you got to strap yourselves up for. This is unrelenting. And Matt Kelly, he's in the comments. He says, I'm here, my liege. No, I'm not. No, it's not like that, Matt. Matt's doing a great job. Dude, Matt's doing a great job on Geekscape. Yeah. I got to tell you, the numbers are great, and I'm super happy. Matt says we should podcast the Friday during our wedding.
You should shoot something. You got all those people there? Just shoot something. Just write a script real quick.
No.
Practice at the rehearsal and just shoot it on the day.
No. Star 2902 from Twitch says, you got to send us photos from the wedding. There will be photos of the wedding. We're going to have guys, this is a pretty nerdy wedding. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'm really excited about it. But yeah, it's fun. And Heidi's like, you know what? You're not the only filmmaker here. No. Heidi is very much a filmmaker. She's a better writer than me, I'll tell you that. she is. It's just the truth. She's a better writer than me, Garrett. I write a lot, but I think I write a lot of like noise. Heidi actually like writes with like focus.
Oh, what's that like?
I don't know, but she'll write. She'd be like, yeah, I spent like an hour on something and I'll read it. I'll be like, this is better than anything I've spent a month on. So that's fun. We know where the talent is in this relationship. All right, Garrett, speaking of talent, can I just tell you, dude, like straight up, how I was not that into like the idea of another Star Wars show so quickly after Obi-Wan Kenobi. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you know, and then I hear like Andor is like 18 episodes long. Is that correct?
18 episodes? It is 24 episodes. Yes.
Wow. So it's good. So I'm like, okay, Jonathan, you're signing up for like 24 episodes of Andor. I'm not looking forward to it too much, but Heidi went out of town. Ian and Justin on the chat started talking about Andor. Jonathan, have you watched it? Jonathan, have you watched it? So I was like, okay, there's three episodes up. I'm doing laundry and just kind of like putting my head together. I'm going to put Andor on. And I got to tell you, dude, Garrett, Andor's awesome.
Yes, it is.
Andor, yes, it is. Andor's awesome.
I've been looking forward to the show because I, you know, I really, of all the characters in Rogue One, I really like Diego Luna's portrayal of Andor. The line that sticks out to me the most, like from that movie, is when they're rallying everybody. He says, make 10 men feel like 100. And that's just always something that is just stuck with me. And, you know, I know there's a lot of prequel shows going on right now. You know, Better Call Saul just wrapped up. We got House of the Dragon. Some people were asking, do we need another show that's a prequel? And I say, Lord of the Rings, yes, we do. Yes. This show, it's so many things. It's a spy thriller, but also it's a mundane, like a look at the mundane life. You know, people are talking about Caff, which if you read Star Wars novels like me, you know that that's their version of coffee. So they said Caff, and I was like, and I was like, they're people. Like, that's what I love about it so far.
And Garrett, they're name dropping planets from like Battlefront 2 and in specific types of ships and things. But I don't know if mundane's the word. It's just, you know what? This is the used real Star Wars universe I've wanted since Jedi. And you see hints of it in the movies. You see hints of it in the shows up to here, up to now. I thought that first pilot of, you definitely see it in The Mandalorian.
Yeah.
I think the first two seasons of Mandalorian, you definitely see a used universe, a familiar, gritty universe. That first episode of Obi-Wan Kenobi when he has like a menial job in hiding. Yeah. And you're like, okay, I can get into this. Like, I want to see this used, lived-in universe that made that the first Star Wars film and New Hope did so well. Yeah. This is it.
Yeah.
This is it. I mean, yes, you see the underbelly of some planets. Like you said, you see the workers of the Star Wars universe, the unglamorous stuff. You see different political sects. That being said, in 24 episodes, you'd think that it's going to be boring. You'd think that it's going to be drawn out. And this is a much more focused pace than we've had, than we had in like the really fast moving Star Wars stuff up to this point on Disney Plus. But it's good.
Yes.
And the characters are fleshed out and there's a lot of room to breathe in this. And the moments are touching and you get the motivations. And Tony Gilroy just needs to be, and his whole team just needs to be really applauded on this one. Because this feels great. This feels right. This feels like Star Wars.
When I knew not only was I in, but I knew we were in for something different. When literally in the opening, you know, the first like 10 or so minutes of the first episode, we literally see like Andor is literally a victim of racism. Like it's two guys. They call him a word that I can't remember the exact word. It's basically a space version of a bad word. And like, he's just harassed by two guys that are just like, you know, they are abusing their power. They shouldn't be there. You know, they're doing stuff that they shouldn't be doing. And they're supposed to be the law. And they are just using their power to just enforce their will on this guy. And because of it, you know, one of them ends up accidentally killed. And then Andor kind of has to kill the other, you know, whether it's justified or not. It's how can he trust this guy who just, you know, cornered him and they were going to do whatever they were going to do to him. And to see that explored in a Star Wars show, you know, a lot of people they think that, you know, anything that has a political stance or anything that is, you know, real world shouldn't be explored in these things. And that it's like, why would you even want to make these things if you're not going to these things, you know, something like Star Wars is going to get a lot of eyes on it. And yes, you know, you have people making their horrible YouTube videos with like the horrible, you know, racist and crude thumbnails, but you need this stuff because people need to see it. And whether it's, you know, in a show that exists in a universe where there's little green men with lightsabers, when I saw that, I was absolutely floored. I knew we were in for something different once that was literally in like the first 10 minutes of the show. It was crazy.
That wasn't all of it. You also had the storyline with him searching for his sister, which leads him into the kind of the underbelly that is going to be a big part of the series. He's just looking for his sister, and he doesn't just go looking anywhere. He goes looking in a place where it's looking for escorts and companions. And you realize, oh, there's a little bit of like human trafficking underbelly here too. And nobody uses their real names and the mystery opens up. And you, I mean, Diego Luna is really killing every quiet moment on the show. And there are a lot of pensive moments on the show, and there are a lot of people. This is not a show that exists in clear moralities. Mm-hmm. This is a show that has a lot of internal conflicts going on, even with the quote unquote bad guys. Like, what I love is that these two officers are murdered in the first episode, and then again in the pilot, you have one of their peers say, "Hey, like, we had a murder in this area," and the supervisor's like, "Hey, this is how you're gonna paint it. Like, I don't want you reporting it as a murder. I want you to report it as two people who got into a conflict in a place where they shouldn't have been. And I don't want the noise from this," right? And so you start to get this even in, like, it's not like when you have Darth Vader and it's like, you know, he's bad in that first New Hope. And then, you know the Imperials are bad.
Yeah.
Here you start to have these shaded moralities in every aspect of the show. Nzinga Blake, I got to throw her, shout her out again. She is a great host. And not only that, she hosts a Star Wars show. I'll tell you, she was at D23 and she hosts a Disney show. She says, "I'm glad you guys are fans. I'm going to let our D23 Inside Disney podcast that we're doing on Andor know that it is Geekscape approved." Well, Nzinga, you are Geekscape approved as well. She's talking, Disney and Star Wars and Marvel every week. She should come on Geekscape. That'd be fun. I'll tell you, even though there's like some amazing, the action's awesome. I mean, just the look of this show. This place where he lives, this rundown kind of like mining planet that he lives in, looks so much more real and populated than any of the stuff we've seen. Some of the stuff we see in Mandalorian, it feels like this, but we haven't really seen this too much, and it just breathes a real believable place.
It feels like a fully lived in town where, like, you can imagine people going to the rest of their lives. It's not just, they walk out of frame and they're gone. Like, there's an ecosystem. There's, these people have a sense of community. It doesn't just feel like, oh, I'm looking at, whatever. This isn't real. It feels really lived in, and it's not easy to do, but that's a staple of Star Wars. And I think this show nails it, as well, if not better than many other examples that in Star Wars.
It also introduced Garrett, my favorite new Star Wars character. That's right. Granite. This little dude was only on screen for maybe a minute. A little complaining shit talker character. A little alien dude. I love this character. I don't think he's going to come back. Like, you this little character, Granite. I don't know, man.
Everybody comes back in Star Wars, You never know.
I'll want to see more Granite. I'll
bet you anything. I'm going to be reading a book, and he's going to be in there, and I'll send you a picture of the passage when I read it.
Like, oh, Granite's in this book. I want a whole book about Granite.
You never know. Never say never.
That'd be amazing. Right now, I'm trying to Google the actor who plays Granite, because he is actually a staple of... he's actually a staple of, it's Kieran Shaw, who's a smaller actor, and he's a staple of a lot of Star Wars stuff. So there's Granik. I have him up on screen if you're watching this on Facebook, YouTube, or Twitch, and he's amazing. I was laughing. I literally, like, I'm joking. You think I'm joking, but I was laughing the entire time he's on screen.
I know, just man.
He's just there to argue with his coworker, and I was like, this is so real and believable. He's having an argument with his coworker, and that's something you don't see in Star Wars a lot, when it's just like high concept plot in Star Wars. Nah, you see the people who live there. They're arguing with their coworkers, like you do in your life. Look,
I mean, hey, that's one of the beauties of Star Wars, is you can love you can love your Luke Skywalkers, you can love your Bosks, you can love everybody equally. There's no power scaling. You can love, some people love Darth Maul, some people love Maydeen. People love people.
This is what I want, Dizzy. All right, you watching this? I know you're watching this. I want a Granik series where he runs in Tito from Force Awakens, who is the... let's just be clear. Tito should have been the original hero of the Force Awakens. Like, no offense to Rey, I'm not going to start in on that argument that Rey, this and that. Listen, Tito found BB-1 fair and square. Was that?
BB-8. BB-1.
Yeah, my bad. Thank you. That's what the word's for. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you, sir. Like, Tito found BB-8. He was on his little robotic horse. He found BB-8 in the desert. Like, BB-8 is Tito's droid. And then Rey comes along and steals him. I would argue, uses force powers to steal him and take BB-8, and then goes off in this, you know,
He was trapping a living being. BB-8's alive. He's trapping him in a net, you know.
He belongs to Poe.
He's property. You know, he's Poe's friend. He, you know.
Tito could have returned BB-8.
I don't know. Tito, you know, Ray made it seem like he's not a savory character, you know. If you're hanging out with Uncut Plutt, you're buddies with him. I don't know if you're a savory character.
Cassian Andor isn't necessarily a savory character. He, you know, hangs on the underbelly. He owes a lot of people money. Yeah, you think Tito doesn't owe a lot of people money out there trying to collect junk in the desert?
I don't know. I don't know if I trust Tito. He's up to something.
Here's what I want. I want a Granite series with Tito, and who else we got in here? Who's a little droid guy who works on the droids?
Does it literally? Oh, you mean Babu Frick? I was going to say Babu if Frick. You just say Let's the droid guy, yeah. It doesn't
no,
really
no,
narrow
no,
it down.
No, I know. I'm not that going to just
you know
nuts.
One of my favorite new additions to Star, like one of the most greatest additions to Star Wars in the High Republic book series. There's a character named Geode, and he has a rock.
Yeah, it makes sense.
The passage, you can tell that the writers, every writer in the High Republic, when they get to write Geode, they have the most fun because it's like this really long paragraph, like Geode stood there stronger than any person had ever stood. And it's just like a rock. And so many people in the books would be like, it's just a dumb rock. And then you'll be reading a section in the third act and it's like heading into battle. Geode was there. How did he get here? And it's like, it's the greatest. I love Geode. I love
it. You just had to suspend your disbelief and know that Geode is the man. Geo's awesome. Big Yanks is in the chat. He's yelling at me. He's like, it's Frick. Babu Frick. And I'm like, yeah, we got a fan club going. We're going to start the Granic fan club.
He's going to be Mandalorian season 3.
I'm in. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I did hear that announcement that Babu Frick's going to show up in Mandalorian season. You give the people what they want. Give Granic a lightsaber. I don't know if you want to go so far as giving Granic a lightsaber. Nazinga says, hey, listen, this may be a question a lot of Geekscapers have. How can I share this episode to give you all a shout out? Well, easy enough. The episode will be up on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, and all of your podcatchers as soon as I post it. And as soon as we finish recording this one, it'll be up on the Geekscape TV YouTube channel. There's tons of Geekscape out there. You don't need to share the live episode. You can share it once it's done. But hey, you want to bring your friends in on the chat?
I need a little publicity. I'm trying to make it in the film industry. I need a little
Garrett,
publicity.
What's going on?
I know, man. My stuff.
You graduate from film school. I loved having you as a student, but now, like, what are you doing? What are you doing?
I don't know, man.
Stealing hubcaps?
Trying to make it day to day at this point. you know, it's a hard industry. You know. You know, I love it. It's the mistress that, you know, you love it, but it scorns you. I don't know why I said that, but
yeah, I would go with both a blessing and a curse.
It's like a sweet caress to your face, and then you get slapped across that right after. It's like that.
I'm starting to learn a lot about your relationships. I'm learning about you, Garrett. Please,
you know, it's a hard industry out there. You know, I write because if I don't, I get in trouble with the man who is on the screen with me, or if you're listening, man, who's the other voice. But you know, it ain't easy out there. But I'm trying. You know, I do say,
hey, Garrett, are you writing? Are you writing?
And then he gets no reply for hours.
There's something you know what? If you're a little frustrated with the career right now, there's always something you could be doing for free. It only costs work and thought. Yeah. In time, well, you got
to
be writing.
The only thing is, my script pages aren't yet paying to keep the lights on. I wish that the lights went off. As I said, that would have been pretty dramatic. But
I know it is a rough life.
I want to make it in this industry because I don't want to work retail again, and I don't want to work a boring 9-to-5. I'm a storyteller. I don't want to have to tell you where the yard clippers are, what aisle. I've done that before. Not fun. Oof.
I'll tell you what, Emily, who I think you're familiar with, is on YouTube watching the show, and she says, it's like icy hot in all the wrong places. I gotta love the entertainment industry. Yeah, I mean, the icy hot is supposed to help you, soothe you, and like make you feel better. If you put it in the wrong places, though, it burns like
you know. Jack's body must be in disrepair. Just the fact he has to use icy hot, he has to use gold bond, he has to get help from the general. It's like,
who's this? Listen, we don't live in your apartment. Can you, if you're going to talk about somebody we don't know about, can you introduce him to the Geekscape?
Shaquille O'Neal?
Oh, Shaq. I thought you said Jack, your old roommate.
He's got icy hot. He's
Shaq's body. Shaq competed at a professional level for like 20 years. Shaq's body is
shambles.
Yeah.
You know, he wrestled a match a couple of years ago in AEW. He got put to the table by Cody Rhodes. It was pretty crazy.
Sure. Yeah, I saw that poor table. Could you imagine Shaq landing on you?
I know. Poor thing never stood a chance. There's two of them, I think.
Okay, so Garrett, I got to tell you how excited I am. HBO next year, they're going to be talking a little bit of video games. They've got this Last of Us adaptation. Dude, this is Craig Mazin. He did the award-winning Chernobyl series, and now he is doing this adaptation of The Last of Us. This looks great. There's a teaser trailer up, Geekscapus. I'm in love with it. You see Pedro Pascal playing Joel from Last of Us. It hits a lot of the beats from the game. The first game, you see some of the beats, I think, from the second game. I didn't play through the second game yet. But all of the Last of Us beats are there. And if you're not familiar with The Last of Us, Geekscapus, it's one of the biggest video games around from Naughty Dog. And it's a planet. It's like Earth is starting to get infected by a spore-like virus. Like this
cordyceps.
The cordyceps, right? And they transform you. It's almost like turning you into zombies. There's a little bit of Walking Dead feeling in this trailer. There's actually a lot, but the cordyceps are very aggressive. And if you're infected, you're infected, and you start to mutate, and then you start to want to kill people. So of course society falls into disrepair. And then this main character, Joel, discovers a girl who may be immune to the cordyceps, you learn in the game. And he has to transport her across the United States, where both humans and cordyceps are all trying to kill her. I mean, the game jumps several years, so it starts on like the night that the shit hits the fan, and then it jumps several years, and everything's in ruins for the most part, and everything is hostile. And I mean, I love the game. I think Naughty Dog does an incredible job of like building game worlds and building that stuff out, and this looks like a pretty accurate like portrayal of that. This looks great.
Yeah.
When you watched the trailer, you were stoked.
I didn't watch the trailer, as I say every time. Hashtag didn't watch, gonna see, because I don't watch trailers for things I'm excited for. I just don't. I haven't willingly watched a trailer since 2017. But
that's fantastic.
Yeah.
With that kind of discipline, you should be writing.
This guy. No, this was a podcast 15 years. He thinks he can just take those little shots. Also, you haven't played yet. I mean, I know you're like an adult man, so you have like a life, but you didn't play Last of Us Part 2. What are you doing, man?
I'm sorry. As much as I love the world of the game, it's not truly an open world game. It's very much on rails.
That one's that's the one.
It is a playable movie for the most part. When you play one of these Naughty Dog games, the movies are phenomenal. If you're going to play a playable movie, play, you know, The Last of Us, play one of these Naughty Dog games. They're phenomenal. But at the end of the day, like, I'm a huge fan of open worlds. Like, I will platinum Ghost of Tsushima, which is a massive game, but it's open world. And like, you have a lot of choices. And if you get bored with one aspect of the game, you can go explore other aspects. Here, you're very much on rails. You're very much following the narrative of the game. It's a fantastic narrative, but I found a little bit of repetition going on by the time I was done with Last of Us 1. Wow. I'll give it a breather, and then I'll jump into Last of Us 2.
Yes, I played the original when I was 14 years old, even though it's rated immature because I'm a bad boy. And then I played the sequel when it came out. And I absolutely adore these games. I think, you know, they are one of those things where they transcend, not that games need to transcend anything, but it's like, you know, with films, you have their films that like, these are a perfect example of filmmaking, of story, of character, of acting. Last of Us for games that, you know, in the same way you can put forth a neat, this comic is, perfect example, Mr. Miracle or Strange Adventures from Tom King. I love this world. I love the characters. I love the story it tells, and something I'm really excited about. You know, there people always are talking about video game adaptations, whether they work for you, whether they don't. This series is it has Neil Druckmann who directed and wrote for Last of Us and Last of Us Part Two. He wrote a good majority of this. I think I even saw. He may have directed an episode, maybe, but he has been there from the ground floor. That's the correct term. I thought I said that wrong. He and so what I'm really excited for is obviously you don't want to just put the game on the screen. And they've said that, you know, it's a different medium. So I'm interested to see how the story of The Last of Us translates to being the medium of television. You know, they wanted to make a movie for many years, and I don't think a movie would have worked just because of what the context of the story is. Like you said, there are time jumps. There are, for whether they're years, there's months. It's, you are seeing this father-daughter relationship really grow between these two people. And yes, many films have been successful and done that. Look at a recent example like Logan. But for this particular story, what they are trying to tell over, you know, them going through America and seeing different, meeting with different people, seeing some people who have gotten stronger, you know, who have grown from the tragedies that they face, and other people that have become more monstrous than any of the clickers that they're going to encounter. It's, I love this world. And for me, it's like, yes, I enjoyed like the cordyceps, the clickers and all that. But for me, it's always been this story of a father and a daughter. You know, in the first game you play as Joel, second game you play as Ellie, and you get to see this relationship from two sides. And oh, they're just, I love the story. Both the games have broke me in different ways. And I just can't wait to see what they're going to do, especially, you know, we know that there's one season for sure happening, but is this one season the first game? What if they, you know, what if they get past the first game? Are they going to do, there is another time jump between the first and second game. Are they going to, you know, show stuff that we've never got to see in the game? It's just, it's a whole world of possibilities. I don't want to get ahead of myself, but I really cannot wait to see what they got cooking for the show.
Well, let me tell you what's in the trailer then. I'm kidding. You don't want to know
everything that happened.
Yeah. Here's the whole trailer breakdown, Garrett. Since you're actively avoiding the trailer, let me just break it all down for you.
Okay,
and ruin
let's
it.
Go.
No, I'm not doing Shot that. No, listen, I would love to play more video games, but wait, what am I talking about, Geekscapist? I did spend the last week as my as I was mentally trying to keep it together with all the stresses of everything going on. I went and found some relaxation in video games. Of course, I'm talking about a return to one of my favorite places around, Monkey Island. They have a brand new game that's out, Return to Monkey Island. If you've listened to Geekscape for any number of episodes, sooner or later, I'm going to talk about how much I love Monkey Island. Monkey Island, The Secret of Monkey Island was a game 1990-91, one of the original text adventure games that LucasArts put out. And it's a puzzle game for the most part. There have been five Monkey Island games before this. Secret of Monkey Island was the first one. LeChuck's Revenge is the second one, and it goes on and on. Then suddenly in like, I think July or August, there was suddenly an announcement that there was a brand new Monkey Island game and that it was going to be coming out really fast on September 19th, because it's Talk Like a Pirate Day. And that suddenly LucasArts was going to like make a brand new Monkey Island game, which I was shocked by, because a part of me thought that LucasArts, when Disney acquired it, was basically just going to be doing a lot of Star Wars games. And for the most part, that is very true. LucasArts has just been doing Star Wars game, Star Wars game, Star Wars game. Why wouldn't you? That's the moneymaker. And so a more obscure title like Monkey Island, like, sure, it was an adventure game. Adventure game fans liked it in the 90s. It, you know, it had its fandom, but it wasn't exactly a cash cow. But the fans are hardcore. Like, I have Monkey Island stuff all over my office. Mm-hmm. I have some signed artwork in the hallway. I'm a massive Monkey Island fan. It's a fun game. It's hilarious. It is a text-based adventure game. And if you ever laugh at any of the stuff I do here on Geekscape, that's all Monkey Island. Like, Monkey Island was like the beginning of like me appreciating humor. If they don't, do not play Monkey. Actually, you know what? If you want something funnier, Monkey Island. Go to Monkey Island if you want something funnier.
What's
with
real humor?
Yeah, if you want some actual humor, go visit Monkey Island. It is a puzzle game. I will tell you, though, I had a little bit of, you know, we've been playing these brand new games, and for the most part, puzzle games kind of died out a little bit. As you kind of went into the 2000s and things started speeding up on PCs, like, you didn't want to just play an adventure game. You could play Doom, and then you could play like flying games, and you could play Call of Duty, and games were getting faster. So there wasn't a whole lot of room to play an adventure game, because basically an adventure game is you end up with an inventory system. And when you run into a problem in any of the screens, you basically just go through your inventory and try and combine things for solutions. You're like, okay, well, let me try this. Or if you find yourself in a dialogue tree with a character, you just retry the dialogue tree until you have their solution that'll advance the story. So for the most part, adventure games were their own worst enemy, because as games got faster and more technically impressive and had better graphics, adventure games were still kind of a slow, very readable story. It was like an interactive book. And so they just were part of an earlier era. When I started Return to Monkey Island, first off, the nostalgia like just washed over me. I love hearing the music. I love the brand new art style. Every part of it felt familiar. That being said, when I started playing it and got back into the inventory solution system of saying like, hey, I've got this random, you know, one of the most famous inventory items in the original Monkey Island was a rubber chicken with a pulley in it. Yeah, you're going to use it. But you end up with a rubber chicken with a pulley in it. The game is hilarious. The game makes fun of itself a lot. When I got back into that, I was like, oh, I actually had to slow down my impatience with video games. Like I had to be like, okay, no, Jonathan, you're actually going to read a lot, or you're actually going to listen to the voice acting a lot. You're actually going to like let the story play out, and you're going to appreciate it for the storytelling and the humor. It does all those things amazingly well. This game is so much fun. I would urge you, if you want to play this game, play the special editions that were published in the last 10 years of the Secret of Monkey Island and then LeChuck's Revenge, and then you'll be ready for this game. This is the sixth game in the series, but I would play this as the third game. If you just want to play three games and get the whole story, this is enough. It does allude to some of the other games in the series. It makes jokes about all of it. I don't know of a game series that makes fun of itself or makes fun of video games as much as Monkey Island does. And I got to tell you, one of the Naughty Dog directors is actually cameos in Monkey Island.
I think I saw him say something about that. It was awesome.
So yeah, it's kind of, I mean, Monkey Island's kind of an inside joke in video games to a sense. Like it was one of the earliest video games for a lot of people, and this is still a GOAT as far as I'm concerned, especially for adventure games. LucasArts made some of the best ones, it was like LucasArts and Sierra. Those were like the if you want to play an adventure games, it was LucasArts and Sierra, and LucasArts, this is still quality. It's all the original people making the game again. I loved it. I beat it last night. I was sad to see it go. I might replay it soon. But yeah, I enjoyed my return to Monkey Island. It was awesome.
You know, it's not, the way you feel about Monkey Island is similar to how I feel about Kingdom Hearts. And you are a better man than I saying, yo, you only play these three, where I tell people, no, if you're going to play Kingdom Hearts, you're going to play every single one. You're going to play the console ones. You're going to play the handheld ones. You're going to watch a movie that they have from the cutscenes from the phone game, and you're going to watch those for 2 hours. So you're a better man than I. I make everyone do it all.
I think that Monkey Island 1, Monkey Island 2, they have special editions that are out, which bring up the graphics and the gameplay quality. That's why I think you would enjoy it. Yeah. Games 3, 4, 5... were actually done by different development teams. Mm-hmm. So even though they're familiar and they're fun and they're really funny, there's three games that have the Monkey Island like top tier magic, and it's those. It's the first two and this last one. We have a comment from Hollow9 on YouTube on the show, and he says, hey, listen, Jonathan should check out games like Danganronpa. Games like that are the new wave of adventure games, basically. And I say to you, Hollow89, you said the magic word. Danganronpa! You're like, what the hell did Jonathan just yell that for? Well, Garrett, as my ward, let me just tell you straight up, Danganronpa has a special place in our hearts because Josh Jackson of Geekscape Games loves Danganronpa. Okay. He won't stop talking about it. It's like one of his favorite franchises. And it got so out of control with the Danganronpa that there was a Comic-Con where the first night of Comic-Con, we're hyper. We're excited to see our friends for the first, you know, in a year we haven't seen since the last Comic-Con. Yeah. Matt Kelly, Josh Jackson, Shane O'Hare, Derek and I walking around San Diego. And I'm so excited to see my friends, and we're having fun. It's nerd spring break. I'm yelling Danganronpa everywhere. I didn't even know what it was. I knew it was a game series. I knew it was text-based adventure kind of stuff like I love. Yeah. But I was just running around going, Danganronpa! Awesome. Like random. It was like my greeting. It was like my war cry. Yeah. People would just be walking around like, why is this guy yelling Danganronpa? What the hell is a Danganronpa? Yeah. Danganronpa! Just because I heard Josh say it so many times. So Geekscapist, when I see you at the next Comic-Con, maybe LA Comic-Con. That's how Geekscapists greet each other.
Heck yeah.
Danganronpa. Matt Kelly says, well, hold up. I actually wasn't there that year. No, Matt, haven't you been at every... That was the year before I started coming to SDCC.
That's when he left to become Nightwing.
I don't understand. Like, Matt, I thought that since 2010, your first Comic-Con, you'd always been... You missed a year or two? That's not continuity for me. No.
Matt Kelly, he left to go become Nightwing. Okay, that was when he got his solo book.
That was
book
Matt's, and like, you know, darker period.
Yeah, you know, he's Nightwing now. Okay,
that's when he went to make his grunge album, his Mariah Carey grunge album. Yeah. That was his phase right there. Matt Kelly, I thought that you were always at Comic-Con. Maybe if you'd have been there, I wouldn't have been running around yelling Danganronpa at everybody. Matt would have kept me there. Well, hold up. There was a 5 to 6 year space between me moving home from LA. Matt, are you telling me that you've been coming to, you've been a fixture of Geekscape at Comic-Con since 2010, our first year with the booth? You've been a part of Geekscape. You're telling me there were 5 or 6 years of that 12 year span that you weren't coming to Comic-Con? No, I don't believe you.
Like a movie where we see all your memories and then we see them from other people's perspectives, and Matt is just not there. Like, you're talking to Matt, and then everyone's like, what the heck is Lyndon doing?
Who is Matt Kelly? He was like, he's like somebody I just created
in your head.
It's okay. Matt Kelly and I will just go play by ourselves. It's like, okay, Jonathan. He's walking away. I just have this ragged doll that I'm dragging. Matt Kelly, why won't you sit up straight? He's just like falling over. Wow. So Matt Kelly is either my first ward. Let's keep track. One of the co-hosts of the very popular Geekscape podcast, Horror Movie Night, or he's the beginning of my mental illness.
Maybe he's your Batmite.
Yeah, he could be my Batmite. he's probably my Mr. Missileflix. Yeah. He says, I missed the first 2 years, came for 2 years, moved home from Los Angeles, and then it took me 5 years to get a job that had paid vacation time to come. No, that's not true, Matt.
No, he's wrong. No, I don't care if you lived it. You're wrong.
I understand that that's your life and that you lived it, but no, you're wrong. Nope. Matt's been at every... No, thanks, Matt, but I hate to call you a liar. You were at every Comic-Con. Thank you. Goodbye. I just don't know how I would have survived Comic-Con without that support structure that Matt... No, Matt, do not miss another Comic-Con. No. All right. Like, when I was in high school, Garrett, you went to high school recently. This nerd stuff, you had the MCU. You had all this stuff. Yeah. It was super popular. When I was in high school, let me tell you something. Mm-hmm. It was not so popular. I had a job at Westlake Comic Books and Cards there in Austin. And the popular kids would get together in the parking lot outside the windows of the comic book store on Fridays to hang out, do a little pre-party, and then they would drive away to their parties. I would be at the comic book store inside, and I'd come out and be like, hey, what are y'all up to? Y'all doing anything fun this weekend?
Think about Rom the Space
Knight. What do you think? What do you think of Gen 13? And I would talk to these.
Yeah, Rob Liefeld, he's a character.
These are kids I would become friends with Rob Liefeld. So eat it, popular kids in high school.
Yeah.
That being said, I remember this very distinctly, and they cannot deny this. On Friday nights, when they were pre-partying in the parking lot of the high school behind the Popeyes, I would go out there and be like, hey, what are y'all up to this weekend? They would say nothing. They would drive away in their trucks. I would go in and read my comic books and console myself, because I knew that on Monday they would all be sharing stories of the party they went to on Friday night that I did not go to. Big Yanks, totally, you nailed the period. It was definitely the beginning of Image, and Wetworks was a book that I hunted down and got copies of. So basically, what I want to say is, Garrett, whenever I need to console myself, as I've had a very tough week, whenever I've had to console myself, there are a lot of stressors going on in my life right now, I go to comics. Let's talk comics now. Wasn't that a long intro for that? Yeah. Let's talk comics, baby. One of the things I want to talk about, let's talk about this big Marvel crossover, the Axe. This is the Avengers versus the X-Men versus the Eternals. I really thought that I was not going to want to read this. I thought this was a crossover that was a bit too much. Maybe Marvel trying to put some value into the Eternals brand. I got to tell you, I kind of love it.
It's awesome.
I'm really kind of enjoying the Avengers X-Men Eternals storyline in the crossover. Why is this working? Like, why do you think this storyline is working? Because it's way too many characters. Like, if you just tell an eternal story, like in the movie, there's already too many characters. But then when you add the Avengers team, we're definitely more familiar with the Avengers now. Yeah. When you add the X-Men, and there's way too many X-Men characters, but we're familiar with the main ones. Why is this crossover working? It should be totally buckling under the pressure of way too many characters that it needs to satisfy.
Something, obviously they always plan out these big events at the retreats, but something I think has really helped is, Kieran Gillen is the anchor. He is the architect of this story. He wrote 12 issues of Eternals. He wrote some one-shots that related to that, and he's written all the Judgment Day, the main issues he's written. Even the three, if you're watching, the three one-shots that are on the screen, he wrote all three of those. He's writing the one of the main tie-ins. I think having a singular voice has really, really helped. Not that previous fans haven't had that, but really it seems like Kieran Gillen's even one of the X-Writers right now. He's writing Immortal X-Men, so he's in that office. He's in the Eternals office. He's working closely with Jason Aaron, who's writing Avengers right now. And I just, this book is, it's so many things. Like, I feel like the most surface-level way to look at it is it's X-Men versus Eternals with the Avengers in the middle, how they pitched it. But really, it is a story of, the X-Men have, they've been playing gods. They have kind of raised their stock on Earth, and they have been playing with immortality and resurrection. And, it was only going to be a while before literal eternal beings like the Eternals noticed that, now led by Druig, who's not a great person. And so he that's going to be something that bothers him, is like, hey, we're the gods of Earth. We are their champions, even though he wants to be a champion for a nefarious reason. And then you have the Avengers, who are, yes, one of them is a god. Many of them have crazy spacefaring powers, but they're our closest thing to the humans. And I really like that the book is showcasing the everyday person who is literally on the ground as these gods are coming to judge. The gods of the gods are coming, the Celestials to judge. And I just think it's just so many interesting things. It's immortality. It's heroism. It's, what is right? Is it right that the X-Men are eternal? Is it right that the Eternals are eternal? Who gets to decide all these things? It's such a melting pot of so many fun ideas that I really think that they're hitting it out of the park.
And the thing is, Geekscape, is if we do not talk as much comics as I'd like to on this show, but if you are kind of unfamiliar with what Garrett just said, the X-Men in the last, since the Hickman run that I definitely recommended in 2019, and since the Jonathan Hickman stuff, the X-Men have discovered five X-Men who, when you combine their powers, can actually just resuscitate you if you die. Like, you have Professor X, who can remember your memories and store them in Cerebro, so when you die, you can just have your memories jacked in your body. There's another X-Men who can basically grow an egg, and there's another X-Men that can create a resuscitated mutant. So basically, if you combine these five important mutant characters, if Garrett was to die tomorrow, I could just go back to Garrett's last reboot in the last storage backup, and I could just bring Garrett back to life. And then it put the memories back in. So basically the X-Men, even though they are quote unquote dying, they're able to bring themselves back to life and keep fighting. When the Eternals, who are the eternal kind of stewards of life on Earth, discover that the X-Men aren't dying, they're like, whoa, whoa, wait a minute. This is our job. They're a little too powerful, and they're a deviation of what they're supposed to be. Oh, we're going to classify them as deviants. We have to protect Earth from deviants. We have to get rid of the X-Men. And the Avengers are like, whoa, whoa, y'all are both our friends. Yeah. We don't want y'all fighting. What the hell's going on? And like you said, they got thrown in the middle. It's not that black and white. I'm loving it. I think what's good is that even though there's the main storyline book, you do have the same stories being covered a bit in the Avengers for that perspective, and the Eternals book for that perspective, and the X-Men book for that perspective, and then various single issues with other characters. So you're seeing a lot of the same narrative beats from the crossover being done from different perspectives. And it kind of helps clarify what's been going on. It doesn't move too fast for you to be like, whoa, 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 too many characters. What the hell's going on? You're able to see the same actions happen throughout. Yeah. And ultimately it all boils down to the fact that yes, the Eternals worship the Celestials. The Celestials are the ones who gave them the mission to be stewards of the Earth. They answer the Celestials, So Tony Stark and company are like, you know what? If they listen to the Celestials, let's make our own Celestial, because the Avengers have been using the body of a Celestial as their Avengers mansion for the last couple of years. So they bring that Celestial back to life, and the Celestial immediately wakes up and is like, yeah, okay, well, I'm a god, so I'm going to judge. If y'all don't pass, I'm going to destroy the Earth. And so they have 24 hours to find out if like morality on Earth is salvageable or not. And that's kind of the brunt of the story, is like you said, like, is this world worth saving? Whose job is it to save it? And if they don't figure that out, the Celestial is going to give all of planet Earth a thumbs down and erase it. And so it's kind of a fun, it is a really fun story. And I'm surprised at how organized it is.
Yeah. I really like, in recent years, I like how Marvel have been kind of structuring some of their events, where they'll have an event that usually is like, for example, a couple years ago, we had Empire with a Y, which was Avengers Fantastic Four. And then they usually have an event that spins out of a book. So there was King in Black for Venom. There was Devil's Reign for Daredevil, which was incredible. Both of those are incredible. I love both those books. So I like how they are kind of, you know, one year you could get one that is the culmination of what's going on in a single story, like a single issue, or going on one series, I should say. And then you have another one that is built off the back of multiple series where they're all culminating. I really like how they've been structuring their events recently.
Yeah, Marvel has it together. That being said, I'm not a big fan of the Distinguished Competition. I'm reading some of the books. Obviously, if Mark Waid writes it, I think World's Finest is fun. And I just picked up Batman versus Robin, which is the Mark Waid spinoff from World's Finest. I haven't read it yet. I've been so behind on comics, it's getting kind of embarrassing. I think my bedside table is going to collapse under the pressure. I've been too busy playing Return of the Monkey Island and trying to keep my brain from cracking. If you were to suggest something outside of the Marvel comics, what would you suggest? What's the good stuff to read, Garrett?
I would say outside of Marvel and even outside of DC, the book I'm loving right now is Do a Powerbomb. It's Image Comic. It is written and drawn by Daniel Warren Johnson. He most recently did a Beta Ray Bill miniseries that I had known about. I didn't get a chance to read, and then the trade came out. I saw they were covering it on Comic Pop, a YouTube channel I'm a fan of. And so I immediately ran out and I bought it. And his artwork is, you know, he writes and draws his own stories. And his artwork is just so dynamic. It's metal. It's awesome. And in that Beta Ray Bill book, something I immediately noticed was Beta Ray Bill uses a lot of wrestling moves. He's doing full bridge German suplexes. He's doing V-triggers. He's doing all these different things. And or actually, Surtur does a V-trigger. And so Daniel Warren Johnson is currently writing a book called Do a Powerbomb, and he's also drawing it. And he is much like myself, I became a wrestling fan in 2016. He became one in 2018. And he, like myself, has fallen in love with that medium of storytelling. Wrestling, yes, it is predetermined. It's whatever you want to say, blah, 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 blah. It's a beautiful story. Like, when stories actually come together, they are just as rewarding as any long-form story you're going to watch. And so this book is about a woman whose mother died in the ring, and she is basically given a chance. She's been trying to be a wrestler herself, but it just hasn't taken off yet. And she is basically entering an otherworldly tournament where she will finally get her shot to be a wrestler. And it's like an afterlife. And I think the way someone described it is, it's like pro wrestling meets like Dragon Ball Z. And it is so fun. I've only read the first issue so far, just because I only have a few of the issues. One of the ones my store didn't have, so I had to buy it online. Which I recommend, if, you know, go to your local comic book store, shop there first. And then if they don't have certain issues, I usually go online and I'll find them from a comic store online. But yes, it's so great. Even if you don't love pro wrestling, I think it is very much worth the read, and I think you will get something out of it. It's great.
No, the Eternal Tournament like storyline kind of sounds really cool. And I'm always up for the whole reclamation of your family's honor. Okay, I'm going to take that recommendation. Geekscapists, if you haven't been watching the TikTok, I started a TikTok during Comic-Con, and every week I talk about the comics that I bought that week. It's pretty Marvel heavy. It's also indie heavy. But if you want anything more diverse, I would say you should go and follow Garrett on social media. He's at Garrett Briones, I think, on Instagram and Twitter, or just
Twitter is Garrett S. Briones, with right between the T and the B, because someone else got Garrett Briones before I could.
Well, you Google Garrett Briones, you will find him. I got to give a quick shout out while we're talking Image. Our good friend Hannah Rose May, who is a former Geekscape guest, she should come back. I invited her to sign at the Geekscape booth, and the printer didn't actually send her books. So she was going to sign at the booth this summer. She was going to sign at the Geekscape booth this summer, and she texted me and said, "Hey, I actually don't have my books yet. So I really don't have anything to like show at Comic-Con yet." But she had this Image book. And the great news this week is announced on Wednesday in Deadline that Don Cheadle has optioned her comic Rogues Gallery as a TV series. I don't know what she's a producer on it. And Geekscape, and she can say, you know what? We knew Hannah way back when she was on Geekscape in, I think, 2017. So congrats, Hannah, on that one. That's awesome. It'd be kind of cool to have Don Cheadle producing your TV show. There's only one way to do that. You got to be writing, Garrett. You see how I set you up for that one?
Yeah, I didn't see it coming, you know? That was like a V-trigger to the face right there. I didn't see that coming.
Well, you know what? I've got, you know, wrestling's in my family. And, I'm not done teaching you lessons, even though I'm not leaving
school's
a grade.
Over, but the lessons never stopped.
The schooling has just begun, my ward.
Well, you know what I'm going to do right after this podcast? I'm not going to write, but I will do it tomorrow. I will rest, and then I will do it tomorrow.
That's great. We all need to rest. Geekscape is, I've had a bit of a gauntlet that I've been running, but you know what? The Geekscape is not going to stop. We're recording an episode, I think. I'm recording on an episode on Wednesday that I'll run next week. I have to talk to the publicist, see when the movie comes out that we're promoting. But we're going to have fun, and that episode will be up on both this audio feed and our YouTube channel as soon as I'm allowed to release it. And it sounds like we're going to be doing a podcast right through the wedding. It looks like the Matt Kelly red carpet, London Cox wedding spectacular, the Heidi Cox, Jonathan London wedding spectacular is going to be a Matt Kelly hosted event. So why not? Matt's podcasts are doing great on the network. I am in love with seeing the numbers on the shows on the network, everybody. And I just have to thank you for being a part of that. So if you enjoyed this episode, it's been pretty geeky. It's been pretty awesome. And there's been lots of love for all these awesome things that we love to read and celebrate and play. Share this with your friends. Just hit the little share button. Send it to your friends. Say you got to listen to this or you got to watch this. And you got to subscribe to this. What also helps is if you leave a 5-star review with some nice commentary on whatever podcast you're using to watch or listen to this on. And that's about it. Let me check that. I did that. Cool. I think that's pretty much all I have to say until next week. Geekscapers, I love you. Go follow Garrett on social media. He's got some fantastic opinions and insights like you've had in the last hour. And we'll see y'all next week.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.